Welcome to Look Ahead Radio with Tom Arms and Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Joining us from London, England, as a matter of fact. And as a result, this portion of the program has been pre-recorded to accommodate his sleeping schedule in light of the fact that he is now, once again, 5 hours ahead of us, in light of the fact that they were ahead of us on the change from daylight savings to standard. By the way, Tom, as I, you know, we get the program started, is it called British time, standard time, or just world standard time, or maybe, hey, what about U.S. standard time?
No, it's called Greenwich Mean Time.
Oh, Greenwich Mean Time. Okay. Yeah.
Because the prime meridian passes through the Greenwich Observatory.
Mm-hmm.
And because the Greenwich Observatory is the middle of the world.
Right.
Time world.
Right. And so, okay, so it's Greenwich Medium, Greenwich Standard Time.
Mean Time.
Greenwich Mean Time. Okay.
GMT.
This is one of those little trivia items that we'll have to enjoy from some time with our audience. All right, so you are now standard time, and so we're a five-hour differential. Let's talk now about the weather. I'm just curious what it's like in London as we speak today.
Miserable again.
Ah, okay.
And miserable. You know, gray skies, bit of rain, leaves are falling. It's not. It never gets that cold in London.
Why?
Okay?
What?
It never. No, it very rarely drops below freezing.
Hmm. All right.
And it never gets that hot. It very rarely drops. It very rarely goes above 80 in the summer.
All right. All right. You know, one other item before we get into the issues of the day and the week and year. Curious, we're going to celebrate Veterans Day this weekend, 11-11-11, famous day. And, of course, the Brits have that day, I'm sure, marked as well. What is it called there?
It's called Remembrance Day.
Remembrance Day. Okay.
And it really is a big thing here. I mean, it's a huge thing because it it started after World War One, and everyone wears a poppy from the Flanders fields, and the poppies are made from paper by disabled veterans.
Oh.
So the money all goes to disabled veterans' causes. It's a church service, and it's one of those days, is Christmas, Easter, and Remembrance Day, when the churches are packed. And there's a big ceremony at the cenotaph, which is like the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, which is attended by the royal family and all of the major political leaders and things like that.
Okay. Now, in some regards, this seems somewhat similar to our Memorial Day here in the U.S. Now, of course, Veterans Day is a as a matter of fact, it's renowned as being Armistice Day. That was the day when the peace was signed on the
No, it's when get it right.
Okay.
It is when the war stopped, when the fighting stopped.
Okay. It did.
And they agreed to have a truce.
Okay.
On the 11th day, 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th
month. Right. Okay. Thank you very much for that correction. Well, I stand corrected on that. But the point of the matter is we all recognize Armistice Day, or we call it here Veterans Day. But what you're describing with Remembrance Day has a lot of similarities to our Memorial Day, with one exception, I might add. And thank you very much for making note of this, Tom. And that is the sort of the religious component of this. The churches are packed. I know they are packed to some degree here in the States, but so you're telling me that Remembrance Day really does rank up there with, as you just mentioned, Christmas and maybe Thanksgiving. Well, you don't have Thanksgiving.
And Easter.
Yeah, that impresses me. I might have one kind thought for the Brits there.
We don't have Memorial Day. We just have Remembrance Day.
Yeah, but wrapping it all into one package does make good sense. All right. We'll move on from there. I just wanted to get that quick note there in light of the fact that we're coming up to our Veterans Day, same weekend. Let's talk now about events there and the coverage of news. And just because, obviously, it's consuming a lot of the discussion here in the States, the topic, impeachment. Much coverage there?
Oh, yes. An awful lot of coverage. I think the latest is the EU ambassador, Guy Sundland, changing his testimony to say that, in fact, he was wrong, or he wants to amend what he said earlier and say, yes, the Trump administration did say it was going to be withholding military assistance to Ukraine unless they announced a public investigation into the Bidens. And that's gotten a lot of play. Everyone here is saying, well, that's it. That's quid pro quo. But they've also noticed that President Trump has said, so what?
Well, you know,
so there's a quid pro quo. I don't care.
Well, that's part of the negotiation strategy. Okay, so that coverage has been continuing, and I'm curious: is this, as we say in the trade, above the fold coverage? Is this, in other words, consuming a great deal of the information discoursed, and promoted there?
It's not on the front pages.
Okay.
Because we have an election here, and Brexit is still a big thing on the continent as well.
Okay.
It is certainly the above the fold on the foreign pages, on the foreign news section, and quite often will take up two full pages inside.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right.
But they are on the inside pages.
Okay. Let's talk of another item related to the impeachment. The efforts on the part of Senator Rand Paul to announce the – asking for the identification of the whistleblower. Actually, there are several now, it seems like. The unmasking of the whistleblower you have.
People here are a bit confused. You know, either there's a law which protects the whistleblower or there isn't a law which protects the whistleblower. But if you're going to be unmasking the whistleblower, won't you then be breaking the law?
Well, I don't know that there is a law, and in light of the fact that
certainly the lawyers over here are saying there is.
Okay.
And they're quoting lawyers in the states who are saying there is.
Well.
And that the purpose of the elected officials is to protect the law, not to break it.
Well, the other aspect of this, and we won't get into the details, but the other aspect of this, Tom, is that we're looking at probably the most significant political event in our country, which is the proposed removal or impeachment of the jury case of the president. And that's significant. And one would argue we would like to know the name of the accusers and the witnesses. That's something that
Yes, but the president.
It's called due process.
The president takes an oath to preserve and protect the Constitution, which means to preserve and protect the rule of law.
But this is
the rule of law is just so much more important. Without the rule of law, you've got nothing.
Well,
everything's built on sand.
Related to the rule of law is the old adage of having due process too. That is the rule of law. But I'm never want to debate the issue with you.
We do it every week.
Well, it's getting we're going around in a circle. All right. Now, another item, and let's talk about this. The president's efforts and plans and the withdrawal from the Paris Climate Accord. And I'm curious, is there a feeling that that is going to have a significant impact on the climate issue, if you will?
Yes.
Why?
Because, you know, the United States takes a lead. Or should be taking a lead in issues like this. And I think a lot of people are pointing out here that it doesn't take effect until the day after the election. That is the presidential election. And so that's going to turn climate change into an even bigger election issue in November is the thinking on this side of the Atlantic.
All right. Question, what is the opinion there in the UK for this, your home, about the role of industry and governments on the topic of climate, the whole debate of climate change? And of course, you have your own set of protesters, right?
Yes, we have our Extinction Rebellion protesters who they recently won a court case, by the way, just today, because the police were trying to stop their protest because they were getting a bit out of hand. And so the Extinction Rebellion people took them to court, and they won. They're allowed to protest as much as they want, apparently.
Really?
We're, of course, in the middle of an election, as you know, and all of the political parties have huge commitments to spending on trying to improve climate change.
Mm-hmm.
So it's unanimous that something has to be done among the political establishment here in the UK. There's a Green Party called the Green Party.
Right.
And it is committed in its manifesto to spending about $130 billion on climate change. The Labour Party is talking about $60 or $70 billion.
What would they be spending this money on? Where would they dedicate this money? For what purpose?
A lot of it would go towards development of things like electric cars, putting in electric charging stations for cars. They want to phase out the petrol and diesel driven cars, which are estimated to create something like 30% of all carbon emissions. They also want to spend a lot of money on double glazing for houses, improved insulation, and things like this. Remember, a lot of the housing stock in Europe
is old. Was
built in Victorian times.
Right.
And wasn't really built for modern heating.
All right. I'm going to take a quick break. We're going to come back to that more here in just a moment with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. You're listening to Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Joining us from London, England, this portion of the program has been accommodating, has been recorded to accommodate his sleeping schedule since he's some 5 hours ahead of us. Tom, we were just chatting a moment ago about the issue of the climate accord and what was happening there in the UK and the various amounts of money that the various parties are proposing to spend, I guess, in preparation for the election. My question is, where would that money come from? For you said in one instance, I think it was $60 billion, another one over $100 billion in money, and that's in described as, I guess, U.S. dollars.
That's a question I've been asking too. A lot of it's going to come from borrowing.
Wow.
The Labour Party does want to raise taxes significantly. But still, they would borrow a lot of money. Conservatives are borrowing a lot of money. Now, their argument is that they would be investing in infrastructure and creating jobs in a sort of green economy, to coin the phrase.
All right.
They want to build more wind turbines. They would spend more money on, as I said, putting in double glazing and things like that. That creates jobs. It creates wealth. It's investing in the infrastructure is their argument.
And how well received is this?
It's getting a mixed response. It's getting a mixed response. Some people are saying, yes, they've got a point. And yes, we do have to do something about climate change and we're not doing it quickly enough. But that's an awful lot of money. And it's going to leave future generations with a huge bill to pay.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've got that same problem here in the States. Tom, let's talk about this in relationship to the rest of Europe. Obviously, you were just mentioning that with the United Kingdom. And, of course, this is an offshoot of our conversation, which began a few minutes ago with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio about the fact that the president officially announced the departure from the Paris Climate Accord. And by the way, the Climate Accord is really nothing of consequence insofar as just it's a casual agreement on the countries working to reduce their carbon footprint. What about the other countries in Europe? Let's take France and Germany.
Well, I think the best way to look at it is to look at the growth of the Green parties across Europe. Ooh. And they are growing very much faster these days. I mean, for instance, in Austria, they did very well in recent elections, and they're going to have to the government there is going to have to include them in their coalition talks. They have grown to be the third largest party in Germany. They are quite big in the Netherlands.
Mm-hmm.
They are also big throughout Scandinavia. They are not terribly big here in the UK. They're relatively small. But certainly across Europe, the Green Party and its environmental message is becoming bigger and louder.
All right. That's fascinating. Let's talk about that in relationship now to the elections there in the UK. And again, we're chatting with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and LookAhead Radio. You mentioned at the outset Brexit. We're going to get back to the issue of the climate concerns. But let's talk here first and foremost about Brexit. What role is that playing in the upcoming elections, and when will the elections be held?
The elections are going to be held on the 12th of December. The official campaign was launched last night. That is, it officially started last night.
Uh-huh.
And there is an official start to the campaign. The reason is because political parties can raise as much money as they want before the campaigns are officially launched.
Oh.
And the Prime Minister goes to Buckingham Palace and Parliament is dissolved. After the campaign starts, there are very strict restrictions on how much money they're allowed to raise.
Now, how aggressive will this race be?
Oh, it's getting dirty already.
Really?
It really is. The Conservatives have put out one video in which they doctored it considerably so that the quotes that were being said by the minister concerned bore no relation to the truth. Labor is doing similar things. It's already a very, very dirty campaign.
Now, how is this distributed? Is by, do you have TV commercials? Can you buy TV commercials?
We can have TV commercials. It's generally distributed by the press, by the media. You know, we don't have, lots of television, radio advertising as you do. We're getting a lot of, in this election, we're getting a lot of people being criticized for lying. And it's being watched much more carefully than it has been in the past. I think credibility and honesty is for unlike previous elections, is going to be a major issue. And that applies to, you know, Brexit. It applies to the argument of people versus parliament. There are all sorts of other cross issues like socialism and capitalism, mm-hmm. anti-Semitism,
ooh.
Rising knife and hate crime. Everyone are coming out with statistics, and you have all the newspapers and the BBC wow. doing fact checks on them all the time.
Okay, one quick item, and I want to get back to socialism here in a moment. The issue of fidelity, and in light of the charges against Boris Johnson and other members of Parliament, is the issue of family fidelity in, you know, marital relationships, is that a big issue?
That's not such a big issue. One thing that has really hurt the Conservatives this week
mm-hmm.
Was that a Conservative politician in Wales basically blew a rape case out of the water. They had to call the rape case off because he divulged some information about the plaintiff, which he shouldn't have. And he knew he was doing it. And he's about to be charged with contempt of court, I think.
Mm.
And this has really angered people.
Ooh.
And he did it because the defendant was a Conservative politician.
Okay. I've got to shift to real quickly since you brought that topic up. Jeffrey Epstein, have there been many disclosures on...
It's moved below the fold.
Really? Well,
as I was telling my friends, Prince Andrew must be very grateful to the Brexiteers.
Okay.
He must be very grateful to the electioneering and everything else because he's been moved right below the fold.
Oh, by the way, I don't know if you've seen the stories about Amy Robach, but she, of course, is stating that ABC News had the goods on Jeffrey Epstein and all of his activities over 3 years ago. And the folks at ABC refused to air it. And that's become a very big issue here in the States and probably will be moving.
We heard that they refused to air it because of pressure from Buckingham Palace.
Well, that's one of the arguments that probably had a role in it, if in fact that is the case, But also they mentioned a lot of U.S. Heavyweights being involved in this as well. Former president, of course, Bill Clinton, major legal representatives, Dershowitz, and other members of the community and of big members. We're talking people with very, as we say in the States, deep pockets. So I was just curious, Jeffrey Epstein, that story is beginning to really generate a lot of discussion everywhere today. All right, I'm going to take a quick break. I want to come back to the issue of the UK elections. I want to talk to you about socialism, and then we're going to get to issues around the world with Tom Arms of lookaheadnews.com and Look Ahead Radio, again, joining us from London, England, and this portion has been pre-recorded to accommodate his sleeping schedule. So stay tuned for more here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. We now return to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Tom, we were just chatting a few moments ago about the UK elections, and you brought up another topic, one that's generating a lot of discussion here in the States, socialism. Is there a strong, and I've, of course, always accused European community of being highly oriented or biased towards a socialist environment. Okay, we'll just set that one aside. How important is this topic of socialism in these campaigns?
In this particular campaign, it's very, very important. Wow. And you would certainly be excused for accusing Labour Party of being socialist. And
right.
They'd be very proud of the brand socialist. The leader of the Labour Party, Jeremy Corbyn, is an old-style socialist.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to have the measures of the economy or the industry and everything else controlled by the state. He wants to nationalize all the utility companies.
Mm.
Wants to nationalize all the railways. He wants to raise the taxes so that basically the top 15% are taxed at an absolutely huge rate. I'm not certain exactly what it is. It's not quite clear yet. And he is a socialist and very proud to be a socialist.
Mm. And what percentage of the voting population would be supporting him, do you think?
Well, that's not easy to say because, a lot of people, like in a lot of elections, there would be negative votes.
Uh-huh.
And both Jeremy Corbyn and Boris Johnson have very, very low, in fact, negative approval ratings.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are a lot of people who would vote for Jeremy Corbyn who would not regard themselves as socialists, but they hate Boris Johnson.
Wow.
And there would be a lot of people who do not regard themselves as capitalists, but they hate Jeremy Corbyn because he has other problems as well, such as being very anti-Trump and being very anti-Semitic.
Right. Well, let's go to this issue of a possible third candidate or a dark horse, if you will.
Well, that would be basically the Liberal Democrats. And certainly the Liberal Democrats are coming up in the polls. The problem with the Liberal Democrats is that their vote is spread thinly throughout the country.
Okay.
And the system here is very similar to the States, where you vote for a candidate for each constituency.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Liberal Democrats, have good support in London, and they have good support in the southwest of England. Labour has very good support in the north of England, And the Conservatives have good support in the south of England and the east of England.
Mm-hmm. So building the coalition is going to be a problem for them.
Yes.
Okay. All right. I'm going to move on to other items, but that was the curious one item I was curious about. Let's talk about another item you mentioned here, and I'm impressed. The 30th anniversary of the fall of the Berlin Wall.
Yeah, I thought it was worth, you know, having a quick look at that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how Germany has fared in the 30 years, in particular, how East Germany has
mm-hmm.
fared
yeah.
in comparison to West Germany. And although it's getting better, according to all the statisticians, there is still a huge division between East and West Germany. For instance, about 35% of all East Germans are 65 or over.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the population in East Germany over the past 30 years has shrunk by about 15%. Unemployment is twice that of West Germany. Wages in West Germany are roughly 12% higher. And only 7% of Germany's top 500 companies are based in the eastern section, in the old East Germany. So, you know, it's still, you know, they haven't really caught up with the West.
What does this mean for the future, the political future of Germany? Of course, Angela Merkel has been working hard to basically consolidate the country. Has she been successful?
Well, that's a good question, Lockwood. You don't hear me say that often, do you?
No, no.
That's a good question, because you find that in East Germany, that's where the more extreme parties
mm-hmm, right.
are located. So there's still a communist party in East Germany, and that's where the Alternative for Deutschland, the populist right-wing party and the anti-immigration party,
mm-hmm.
Has its greatest support. In fact, the AfD slogan is "The East rises again."
Right. Okay.
And so what's happening is the CDU and the Social Democratic Party are not gaining support, and they're losing support to people who are dissatisfied.
Right.
And they're turning to the more simplistic solutions of the populist left and right.
All right. Talking with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with viewpoints around the world. And I intentionally focused on that. Let's talk about Aramco.
Yes. Aramco. Now, for those who don't know what Aramco is, it is, in fact, the big giant company which controls Saudi Arabia's oil.
Mm-hmm, right.
And it is going to be floated. It's going to be floated on stock exchanges around the world. The opening price will be announced on the 17th of November, and you start trading in it. You'll be able to buy shares in Saudi oil from the 11th of December. Now, the question is, why?
Right.
Why?
Right. Yeah.
You know, I mean, why not just keep it private? You know, just siphon off the money. Well, because the Saudis believe that the way things are going with the environmental lobby
mm-hmm.
Is that the oil reserves are not necessarily going to drop. But the need for oil
right.
is going to drop.
Yeah.
And so what they want to do is raise something like $1 trillion on the stock exchanges.
Whoa.
And they're going to invest that mainly in oil. They're going to invest it in trying to work up cheaper and better ways to extract the oil so that they can position themselves to be the number one oil producer when all the other oil producing countries fall by the wayside because of lack of demand.
You know, that I think this is one of the reasons why I enjoy the conversation with you, Tom. Every now and then you accidentally trip across a major news item, and you have done that on several occasions. I've even acknowledged that. But now we're seeing this story, and we're not getting much about this in the press, that Aramco, which is you mentioned Saudi's core company. And by the way, aren't there major investors in Aramco such as Exxon and
yes.
Mobil?
So yes, but the biggest investor is the Saudi royal family.
Okay. And this is a big story. And they're going to be now selling stock in Aramco on the stock markets around the world. That's interesting. Okay, let's move on to another item in light of the fact that we're sort of in that world area of the world. Let's go very quickly to the Washington Post talks on the Nile River Dam.
Yes. Now, this threatening, the talks are starting today.
Uh-huh.
They're taking place as we speak in Washington. I can never figure out how to pronounce his name. Is it Stephen M. Mnuchin?
Mnuchin. Yeah. Yes, it is.
Mnuchin?
Mnuchin. That's correct. Yep.
Yeah, the Treasury Secretary. He's hosting these talks between Sudan, Ethiopia, and Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this goes back to 1959 with the building of the Aswan Dam.
Right.
When the Sudan and Egypt agreed that they would be allowed to build dams which could take a certain amount of water out of the Nile River flow.
Uh-huh.
Now, as you know, the Nile River has been the lifeblood of Egypt since before the time of the pharaohs.
Right.
And it very much still is. They rely on the Nile for their fresh water, industry, irrigation for farms, everything. Excluded from that 1959 agreement was Ethiopia,
mm-hmm.
which controls the headwaters of the Nile. And they are building a massive $4 billion dam called the Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam. And that will be able to supply something like 25% of Ethiopia's electricity, as well as allowing it to export electricity to all the countries around it.
Wow.
Well, the Sudanese and especially the Egyptians are not happy because it's also going to significantly reduce the flow of the Nile River. And there has been talk actually of war.
That, again, breaking news here on Viewpoints Around the World. One item, talking about war, let me touch on this very quickly because we've got to go to a break, Tom. Recep Erdogan of Turkey cracking down on domestic opponents as part of a Syrian invasion?
Yeah. Well, you know, not everyone in Turkey is happy about the Syrian invasion.
Oh.
But he wants to give the impression that everyone is. Okay? For instance, a day after the offensive began, the regulatory body, the Turkish broadcasting regulatory body, RTUK, sent out a warning to all the media outlets that there would be zero tolerance of any broadcasting that may negatively impact on the morale and motivation of the soldiers entering Syria.
One has to wonder why people want to live in that environment.
You know, there's a joke. There's a joke that's going around.
And?
Someone asked a Turk, how are things in Turkey? Oh, we can't complain. Oh, that's good. No, you don't understand.
We can't
complain.
All right. Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. We've got two items we're going to touch on very quickly as we wrap up this program. One, the deadly Delhi smog. I did see a story on that earlier this morning, Tom. And the one I'm really looking forward to hearing about, the Bangkok Burger Eating Competition here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio, the portion of the program that we all look forward to. As always, if you will, the I'll use the French term, denouement, unraveling, the final, the coda of the conversation, the Bangkok Burger Eating Competition. I want to hear about that. But first, Tom, tell us a little something about the deadly Delhi smog. I saw pictures of it earlier today. That's significant.
Well, I'm surprised you could even see the picture.
I saw somebody walking through it.
The air quality index broke through 1,000.
Hmm.
Okay? Now, let's put that in perspective. Readings above 300 are considered hazardous to health.
Ah.
Okay, now, why? And what is the government doing about it? The courts are accusing the government are basically passing the buck. They say they're not doing anything. And what they're doing is they're trying to restrict cars. But that is not really what the problem is. The problem is coming from the adjoining provinces of the Punjab and Haryana. And what's happening is the farmers there are burning the stubble. And the smoke from that stubble is drifting across Delhi and settling over the city and creating this smog. Now, why are they burning the stubble?
Mm-hmm.
Well, a few years ago, it was decided that there wasn't enough water in the Punjab and Haryana. And so what they had to do, government decreed, they had to shorten the growing season. And so instead of planting their rice in April, they were told they could only plant it in June, which means that they don't have enough time to clear the land at the end of the growing season the way they used to do it. And so now they have to burn it, and it's creating all this smog.
Wow. I did see a picture of somebody walking through it, and it was just a fuzzy outline of the individual.
Like soup.
Oh, yes. All right. Now wrapping it up, the Bangkok Burger Eating Competition.
I thought you might want to enter this one.
Well, I'm just first off, is hamburger, I'm assuming that's what we're talking about.
It's a hamburger smothered in smothered in onion rings and mayonnaise, and ketchup.
Oh my goodness.
It weighs 13 pounds.
Whoa.
And is 10,000 calories. If you want to enter the competition, it's at Chris Steaks and Burgers in Bangkok. Now, what happens is you have to buy the burger. It costs you $87. And then if you can eat it in 9 minutes, Chris gives you $337.
Okay.
He also gives you a free ride to the hospital.
Oh, but more importantly, not only to the hospital, but we're going to need some major medical attention when it's all said.
Absolutely.
The Bangkok Burger Eating Competition, 13 pounds. That's the total weight after you add all of the onion rings and mayonnaise and.
Yep.
Oh, my goodness.
10,000 calories for the burger alone.
Oh, my land. All right. Well, we would love to hear how it works out for you, Tom.
Yeah, well, I'll let you know. I'll send you a picture.
Oh, please. The Bangkok Burger Eating Competition. When is the competition?
It's an ongoing competition.
Oh.
He started it a month or so ago, and it went up on YouTube. It's gone viral, and they're queuing up outside the door.
To be sure not. Are they?
Yeah. Yeah. And apparently about one, it's a big moneymaker for them, because about 1 in 10 can actually do it. So, you do your maths. You know, he takes in 870 and pays out 337.
Yeah, but still, the image of it is more than I can. I can't even imagine trying to.
Well, you enjoy your lack of sleep.
Oh, trust me. All right, Tom. As always, thank you very much for being with us. Look forward to chatting with you next week.
Thank you, Lockwood.
Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this afternoon here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio is a production of The Talk Station.